Hello and welcome to a podcast brought to you by The Religion of Aston Villa.
We're a social media account on Twitter and Facebook that wants to get our voices out there and heard, so please join us. Hello guys and welcome to another episode. This is, well, basically it's a bit of a mix of everything, but it is the Lucas Digne episode more so because obviously he's a new signing. We are going to quickly mention the FA Cup game because we haven't had a chance to do a review, when obviously the United game is tomorrow, if you are listening to it as soon as this comes out. And obviously we've got little bits of like El Ghazi going out, Kerr Smith coming in from Scotland. Yeah, so there's, you know, it's a bit of everything, but we are going to, the main bulk of it is going to be on Lucas Digne. So let's go straight into it. I'm with Callum again, as always. So yeah, Lucas Digne, I mean, second signing after Coutinho. What's your initial thought?
Well, it's like we're just getting Barcelona feeder team now, you know, Coutinho now, Lucas Digne. Another transfer that I was quite sceptical at first, you know, when you see £25 million being said for a left back, you know, near enough in the, it should be in his peak years, and you know, probably has only got 2 to 3 brilliant years left if he, you know, if you look at the average. But you know, I think it's one of those signs where he's come in and it's, you know, growing in confidence again, a bit like how I felt with the Coutinho signing. It seems like he had bad blood with Everton, or not with the club, or, you know, at least some of the staff. He seems like he's going to relish in this Gerrard ball and Gerrard system that we've got going, you know, an attacking left back with, you know, pedigree, getting goals and assists in the Premier League. So he brings something new to the table. And if you look at the last few appearances by Matt Target, then you probably say that left back is, I mean, we obviously knew we needed a backup left back, but we probably didn't expect someone as, you know, experienced as Lucas Digne, and, you know, someone who's had lots of Premier League minutes under their belt. So, you know, I think it's something like 20 to 25 million, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which you'd probably say is quite fair for a 28-year-old in the Premier League with, you know, 3.5 seasons under their belt of Premier League experience. And what did we pay, 5 to 10 million less for Target, was it? Something like that, about 15 million for Target?
Yeah, so, 15 to 20. So between,
You'd probably say that Lucas Digne would give you that money back just in his assists alone, so, and his attacking threat alone. So we should get the good end of the deal. I think, isn't it a 4.5-year deal as well?
Yeah, it's a very long time.
I'm so surprised that we've given that sort of deal out. But you know, that's also down to the player. Obviously Gerrard sees his future with Digne as a left back, and Digne wants to stay at the club for that amount of time. So it can only be a good thing. The only thing is, there's, you know, rumours about wages, but it was always going to happen that our wage bill goes up. If you want to go upwards in football, you've got to prepare to, you know, pay the big bucks. And we're doing it. And hopefully it can boost our squad straight away. We get the impact straight away, and you never know, if we keep on going, you know, we can turn some results around. You never know, Europe could be on the cards by the end of the season now.
Yeah, I mean, like when we was linked to him initially, I've been a big fan of Lucas Digne for a long time. He's been superb. He's been one of the best left backs in the league. And when we was linked to him, I just thought it was a bit of a, I wouldn't say a lazy link, but I think it was basically, like you said, because we signed Coutinho, it was kind of like Lucas Digne's fell out of favour, Everton's got a new left back, lazy link, you play with Coutinho at Barca, there it is. Do you know what I mean? So I thought it was a bit of one of those. But when it just kind of like escalated, and then, you know, he put out his little tweet about on his way and stuff, I was like, oh my, we're actually going to get like somebody that's very experienced, as you said, got a lot of very attacking. I mean, and we've paid quite a lot of money for him as well. The wages, like I say, there's been a talks of like 100 grand, 120, something like that, quite a bit, which, okay, it is a lot, but he's been in the Premier League how long? And he's been at a very good, you know, top 10, top 8 side as well. So obviously he's going to be on that type of money anyways. It's something we need as well, which is unlike Villa. Normally we go, I mean, I'm not going to slate Coutinho at all in the slightest, but that position was kind of like, it wasn't a necessity, if that makes sense. Like if you said at the start of end of December, name the positions you want to go for, you'd probably go left back, defensive midfielder, maybe a centre midfielder, or maybe attacking midfield, be like Buendia's coming through and Ramsey's there. So not so much. So you probably go left back, centre half, because Twanzabi was going to go, and defensive midfielder. So we've got Coutinho. I'm not going to moan about Coutinho at all, because he walked into our side. Let's not beat around the bush. But this is actually a position we need, which is brilliant to say that Gerrard's seen us play and gone, do you know what? I know where the weakness is, and gone and done it. So it's definitely an improvement. Target's best season was last season, which I think ties in with the fact that he's played behind closed doors. I think he does better without the pressure of fans. I don't think he has the mentality when we start getting booed and things. I think it plays to him. That's just my opinion. So it's a good signing. It's a very good signing. And I will say, one of the things that made me laugh today, there was a massive thing about how you pronounce his name. And he did one with Everton, and I retweeted it. I tweeted it out, because there's been quite a few ways, and it's Lucas Digne. Lucas Digne is the way we say it. That's the way he pronounced it. And there's people still out there saying that he's saying it wrong. It's his own name. How can he pronounce it wrong? So it's Lucas Digne. If people out there, I'm not gonna lie, I was saying Digne, and I was trying to work it out. But when I heard him say Lucas Digne, I was like, yep, okay, thank you very much. Bit like when we signed Juan Pablo Hangel and you had Angel and all that being said, if you weren't a football fan. So yeah, it's Digne. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens now with Target. I mean, does he just automatically become number two? Is he going to, pull up his socks and start kicking on and become the target of last season? Will he just crumble like a biscuit and get sold? You know, that's the next port of call, because we're not going to have, unless he's going to go, okay, yeah, I'm saying being second best, like he was to Bertrand at Southampton. Is he going to be happy being a number two? I'm not sure. But, you know, he's good enough to be a number one somewhere else. So what do you think? Do you think he's going to be happy to be number two? Do you think he's going to kick on? Or do you think we're just going to get rid?
I think it's something that he would have needed as well. He needs this. He needs, you know, Digne to come in, because he's now got a competition in his hands. You know, when you talk about his spell at Villa and talking about Matt Target, who has he had beneath him to push for his space or just push for his spot? There just hasn't been anyone. So I think, I don't know if he necessarily comes straight into the team. I think it's all going to be dependent on how they come across in the training ground and things that we unfortunately don't get to see. But it's definitely going to be a consideration. And, you know, Target now knows that he needs to step up. He needs to stop making mistakes. Get back to the Target of last season, like you said, when he was at his best.
Yeah.
And it can only be good for us. You know, competition in any position on the pitch is going to be healthy. It's just making sure both players are happy. So that'll be the main concern about keeping all players happy. But, you know, to say Target is 2 years or year and a half younger than Digne, and you just thought, you know, they'd take being rotation, because Well, like you said, he's definitely good enough for somewhere else, but somewhere else is going to be a lower end Premier League team to take him on. You know, competition's fine. You know, when you think about when everyone's fully fit, you're going to think about that for the wide, you know, the wide players. You've got Traore, not El Ghazi, not anymore. Trezeguet, Buendia, Bailey, Coutinho, Watkins can possibly play out there. So, for the club, it's only a good thing. And Gerrard said in his press conference today, he loves to have two world-class players in every position, or for every one position. And like you said, at the start of the window, you probably would have said a left-back was needed anyway.
Yeah.
And to say that we've beaten the likes of Chelsea and Newcastle to a player, I suppose it shows a lot about him as a person, but also us as a place of where we are right now and also of where we want to be.
Yeah, I mean, like, as you said, we did beat them. And I think this kind of shows you the high profile of our manager, that he's kind of above our level in a way, because Coutinho wouldn't have come to Villa. No chance if it was Smith. Nothing against Smith. But he's come to play for Gerrard. I think Lucas Digne was, I think we probably could have got him under Smith, but I think with the likes of Newcastle and Chelsea, I think it would have been a harder task. I think having somebody like Gerrard in charge makes people want to come, you know? So
I also think it's down to his playing style as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think you're looking at how we are playing now. I'm not saying that Smith was bad, you know, bad football, because it wasn't, but it was, you know, there wasn't much game plan, there wasn't much, you know, behind it. And the way we play now, I mean, like, we are going to move on to the Man United game shortly, but the way we played against United, we battered them, you know, when that's a top team in the top six. But before we just go straight on to El Ghazi, because obviously that was, I wouldn't say it's linked to the deal, but it kind of is, isn't it? I don't know if you saw, but El Mohammadi tweeted out, because he's wearing his whole shirt of number 27, basically telling him to look after the shirt, which I thought was a nice little thing for Elmo to remember, you know, playing for us, which is great. Just a couple of names in this list that I'm going to read out just to scare you. And hopefully it's not a bad omen. So obviously, Lucas Digne's got the number 27 shirt now. Before him, and I'll go backwards, so before him and then all the way down. So it was El Mahdi before him, obviously. Adoma, Uncle Albert.
Yeah, then it 27?
Was, mm-hmm, in the 18-19 season, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Elmo again had it in the 17-18 season. But as well, Tishla Bola had it. Richard Delatte had it.
Oh, what a player.
Libor Kozak had it. And the earliest one that I've got is Joe Bennett. So hopefully, it's not a bad omen. Hopefully, he can bring some pride to the shirt like Elmo did, you know, because, you know, he's not the best player in the world, but he is loved by all. So it's exciting. It's a big signing. I think it's a bit of a coup, just as much as Coutinho was. And that left side is now looking a lot more dangerous compared to Target and El Ghazi. Which now brings us on to El Ghazi, you know, because he has, normally I don't really do many when the player leaves, but because he's been with us a long time, you know, he signed on loan, was in the Championship, we got Tukan, and, you know, he's had some special moments. You know, I think he does get, I mean, myself included, has slated him quite a lot because I don't think he's good enough for the Premier League. And don't understand what Everton's seeing him, but we'll soon see. I probably live to regret to say this now. But, you know, good luck to him, because he's never been a horrible player. You know, he's never really, you've never seen anybody, you know, him slight people, or, you know, he had that little bit of a tiff with Mings. But, you know, he's not really been a bad player. I think he's just not been up to the level, if that makes sense. But if we get the money that's been talked about, that's phenomenal business. So, what I mean, any memories of El Ghazi for you, or anything, you know, you'd like to add or anything?
Well, he's not officially gone yet. You know, he's a loan player, so technically he's still owned by us.
Yeah.
I think you're right about there's something being in the Digne deal about El Ghazi going the other way. It'll be interesting to see if Rafa is still there by the end of the season, then if El Ghazi will be there going into the next season. But, you know, you kind of hit it on the head there, really. You know, he's been with us for quite some time now, accumulating 119 appearances, 26 goals and 16 assists. He came into us when we was in, I wouldn't say a bad way, but, you know, he was one of our go-to players, really, in the Championship. And, you know, I think everyone will remember him for the playoff final goal. Then you think about the goal against Everton in the first home game in the Premier League. You know, the goal against West Brom when it was
it's a good goal that was.
Yeah. The two goals against West Brom, wasn't it, even that day as well?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've obviously he's dropped in performance, but we've always said, you know, if El Ghazi turns up, and we know which El Ghazi turns up, then he'll be a handful. You know, maybe his time has come to an end in England, but he would, for me, he'd be a player, if he does leave at the end of the season, he'd be a player that I have I wouldn't say nothing bad to say, but, you know, he'd go with my best wishes. You wouldn't be leaving on bad terms.
Yeah.
For all the fans. He gave everything for us. You know, and he gave us some great memories. And one of the players that you have to thank for us to be in this position right now. You know, he was one of the players that got us into the Premier League. And, you know, you can't take that away from him. So he's been a brilliant servant so far. And, you know, if he was to leave, then we send him off with our best wishes.
Yeah, like I say, paid, what, just over 8 million, just under 8 million, I think it was, after his loan. And he's, like I say, he's got potential to be world-class on his day. But sadly, that day is one in every 30.
Unfortunately for him, it was his inconsistency has become his problem recently. Yeah. And I did see someone, I can't remember who, said it on Twitter. It was like, if we are wanting to go forward as a football club, then we not get rid of the bad or the dead wood. We just have to replace. And unfortunately, El Ghazi comes under that bracket of having to replace and get better, because if we are wanting to get into Europe and push for better things, then people will have to go, no matter who they may be.
Yeah, and obviously one main thing I will say about him for Everton fans is he knows how to take a penalty. High pressure, he's our best penalty taker, or was. So, yeah, good luck to him. Nothing bad to say at all about him as a person. Footballing-wise, I don't understand it from an Everton point of view, because I'd put them on par with us. And if he's not good enough for us, I can't see if he's good enough for them. But, yeah, we'll see what happens with that one. But good luck to him. Before we go to the United one, which is probably the last thing we'll talk about, just quickly mention Kez Smith was signed today from Dundee, rising to 2 million. He looks like a brick shit house. He looks huge. I mean, there's a lot of talk about him being super, like being a very top prospect. It's another coup for Mark Harrison and the academy. I saw that he was training with Man United in pre-season. I think they was having a quick look at him. But I think we've just gone in there, as we've done with everybody else, and just snapped him up. So it's, you know, 17-year-old. I'm sure he can play right back, but he's mainly centre-half. Yeah, it's and oh, when I quickly, because someone mentioned asked me what's his height, so I've had a quick look and he's 6'2".
Yeah.
Because people keep thinking he looks like just dead at the back, like he's just massive, but he's 6'2". So he's a big guy. I genuinely think, I'm not going to say he's the answer to our centre half problems, but I would not be surprised to see him be in and around the substitute bench before the end of the season. I think he's going to make it. I think Courtney House, obviously, a lot of talk about him signing a new deal or being spoke about of extending it, yada, yada, yada. But I genuinely think that this kid is going to be in front of him either next season or this season. I still think we need another centre half. I still think we need an experienced guy. But yeah, I'm happy with this because, like I say, I'm sure the other centre half now in the academy is the under 16s, is he, or under 18s England
Josh
captain.
Freeney,
Yeah,
yeah.
Josh Finney, who's made the bench a couple of times this season as well. So to potentially have them pair as our future centre halves is exciting.
Yeah, big lad to say he's just turned 17. He's had seven appearances for Dundee's first team this season already, with five in the league. So he's been, being nurtured into the first team. We've had some good players come from Scotland before. You look at the likes of Stylian Petrov and John McGinn, just to name a few.
Yeah.
Funny enough, two centre midfielders as well. But yeah, a centre back, kind of like a man mountain. I know on Football Manager that he's got some very good stats for a young player. I've not seen him on FIFA yet, so might have to check that one. But he's been talked about, going to the top. A lot of people rate him highly. He's already in Scotland's under 19s team, so he's playing two ages above him. So, that speaks volumes. And it shows the owners want a good youth team as well, and that they're prepared to spend the money to make sure that our youth is going to be good in the future. And like you said, we've already got Josh Feeney, who's 16, 17. So, them two, possibly the next two coming through. At the same time, you've also got Lamar Bodegaard and Svinkels, the two 18-year-old Dutch players as well. So, centre back doesn't seem to be a problem for the next few years, when they become 19, 20, we look like we're going to be nicely stacked in that department.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think that's what they're trying to do is because just quickly on Luka Dean again, it kind of goes against our philosophy because our philosophy since Suarez and Eden's come in is, buy them young, buy young players, build them up, and then eventually sell them for a big profit. And you look at all the players you brought in, like Watkins, Buendia, Konsa, everyone's is I'm not going to say eventually sold for big money, but they've all been bought young to have, a further career down the line and not kind of buy people at the end of the career. I'm not saying Luka Dean is that, but we've spent 25 million and 5 year deal as good as for someone who's 28. There's no value in selling him after he's, finished with us. So it kind of makes you think, I wonder if philosophy and what we're signing is changing or we're just tweaking a little and getting in some experience. So, going for an academy player kind of counteracts that again by going back to the original philosophy of buy them cheap when I'm young, and teach them the, quote unquote Villa way. So it's good to see that they're that they're still doing that and they're still looking for the youth players and not willing and not buckling at, a £2 million cost because, some League One teams can't afford to spend 2 million on first team, let alone academy players. So it kind of shows you where we are as a club.
Going off that, when you look at the youth team, I have to say that I don't think we actually have a not a, well, I wouldn't say not a decent, but a player of other players that are shining in the under 23s at left back. There's no one screaming out to me saying, oh, this guy's gonna have a good potential, or he's setting the lights up like Aaron Ramsey or Cameron Archer and players like that. So they must have had a look at the youth setup and been like, okay, where haven't we got a player? And I have to say, probably left back would probably be the one.
Yeah.
So by the time Luka Dean's contract either comes to an end or, you know, is in the latter stages of it, we might have a young prospect coming through. So we'll have to see.
Going into the final part of our podcast, which is about the, well, it's a United kind of review, preview, muddled together, because obviously we've played them twice this week. So obviously it's been a week. I mean, if I did it the day of, I'd have been absolutely fuming about the FA Cup game. But now I've calmed down and, you know, it is what it is now. So just quickly cast your mind back. I mean, watching the game itself, I genuinely thought this is the FA Cup game, by the way, just in case people listen to this after the Premiership game. We was on top for vast majority, and I felt sick afterwards because we was cheated out of it, to be honest. I mean, obviously you got to put the ball away, I understand that, but I thought we were streets ahead, and I thought the goal should have stood. And I also thought that, you know, there was a couple of where Ollie did some great skill, hit the bar. Ings put the ball in the back of the net and it was given as offside. Then it was handball. And then they rewind it a bit more and it was a foul. And then they had to rewind it probably a bit more and see somebody fall over at the canteen just to get it disallowed. It was just, it was crazy. I mean, just, you know, just a quick cast on it. What do you remember the game? I mean, are you still pissed as I am?
Yeah, you know, it was an early goal to concede. No one followed a runner. Or, well, but to be fair, McTominay did make a very good run, and it is a good pass. And Martinez said that in his press conference yesterday that it was actually a good quality goal by United, but could have so easily been stopped by us.
Yeah.
After that, you say United were poor, second best for all game. We had some fantastic chances, like you said. Watkins hit the bar. You know, Buendia nearly, well, shot cross to Danny Ings. We were the better team. It was, and like you said, we need to put the ball away, and that's the master of our own downfall, really, is that we didn't put the ball in the net. And when we did, they had to rewind far enough for it to be a foul, which at the time I did actually think it was a foul. Not after, you know, live watching, I thought, oh yeah, that's a goal. But after a few replays, I did think, okay, that is a foul, and you know, it's going to get overturned. But to say how far back they had to go to find something, and because it was United, and because Cavani went down like a sack of shit, you know, he got it, and it's unfortunate, yeah. But I think the main issue that we take away from the game was we need to be more clinical in the final third and put the ball in the net. Obviously, De Gea made some good saves, but, you know, if we'd have put if the Watkins hit the bar, one went in, it's a completely different game. If the Ings first goal that was disallowed goes in, it's another complete different game. The only time we did put the ball in the net, it was brought back for offside. So, and that one was offside. So, frustrating how VAR goes against us again and against Man United, funnily enough. Frustrating how we couldn't put the ball away. But at the same time, some of the football that we played, you know, the constant pressure of a top six team, I think we showed better character, better determination and things like that. So I think you have to walk away positively. Yes, we're at the Cup, unfortunately, for another season. But it now gives us a chance to focus on the league. And only the league. And I think Emi Martinez said in his press conference, it's kind of like revenge this weekend. Yeah. It's obviously going to be a bit of a different game with a few players missing and things like that, and people returning. So we'll have to see how the Premier League game goes, and hopefully it's not the same officials this time.
Well, from Man United's point of view, is they've obviously got a few returns, which doesn't help us. They've got Ronaldo back, Maguire back, Sancho back, and
this is all possibly.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. Well, that's as of today. This was Friday morning's Ralph Ragnick's interview. That they should possibly be back, and the legendary Phil Jones as well. From our point of view, obviously Philip Coutinho, but apparently he's going to be on the bench, which makes sense. You know, for fitness reasons. But you'll definitely see him come on. Lucas Digne is probably going to start, which kind of shows you that he is going to be our number one left back, and Target is going to be benched, probably for the first time in a very long time, because, well, he's had no competition. So it'd be good to see, obviously, a new, you know, everyone loves a debut. Apparently, there's a lot of talk about Sanson starting as well, which is the first start since Boxing Day, which would be brilliant, because I'm a big, big fan of his. But I think that's due to the fact that McGinn's banned, Nakamba.
Yeah, five yellow cards.
Yeah, Nakamba, Bailey's obviously out. And Trezeguet's away on international duty after being shot. It can be a completely different game. I mean, we've got a couple of extra signings which I think work in our favour. You know, obviously Coutinho's going to be one that I think everyone's going to be watching. All eyes are going to be on him, the return to the Premier League. But, you know, it's good, because it kind of takes a bit of extra pressure off Watkins, Ings, whoever's put Buendia, because of an extra man up there who is world-class. You know, let's not beat around the bush. Okay, if we get the Coutinho, as I said on when we did his podcast, so if we can get 70% of the Coutinho they had at Liverpool, we've got a hell of a player. And that 33 million could easily be double. So it depends which Coutinho turns up, because he can be a bit inconsistent, which I think was his problem in La Liga and Bundesliga. But, you know, we're not Bayern Munich. We haven't got world-class players on top of world-class players, and we're not Barcelona, who are the same. You know, we've got the option of Alghazi or Coutinho at the time. You know, so there's obviously an upgrade there, and it's going to be good to see him. And I would love nothing more, and I guess him being an ex-Liverpool player, nothing more to score against the Manx. So I'm very interested. Just before we go, what is your prediction for the game? I mean, like I said, we haven't done many previews just because it's the transfer window. So we are trying to just keep it to reviews and player, because obviously we've got transfer links coming out of our ears, you know, with the potential. Looks like a keeper's coming in from Sheffield United, who's on loan from Roma, which will probably be announced in a couple of days by the sounds of it. So, you know, just as a preview one-off in January, what's your prediction for the game?
If all these injuries do not come back for United, this is, you know, Maguire, Jones, Sancho, Ronaldo.
Mm-hmm.
It can, or we probably will, leave them quite light. You know, McTominay and Shaw are going to be out due to suspension. So left back is going to be an issue for United, and possibly centre defensive midfield. You'd probably say Fred and Matic come in, and Matic, all right, he might have the height, but he's not going to have the athleticism of what he once had. So I'm going to be positive, because that's the only way forward. Like you said, I hope Coutinho gets some minutes. I can see him coming on for like the 80th minute.
Yes.
Soak up the applause, pass the ball around a bit, and then, you know, that's 10 minutes done. And then he'll probably start again. Is it Everton after United?
I believe it is.
Yeah. So we'll see. But I'm going to go, I'm going to go 2-1 Villa.
Yeah, same as me, 2-1. I think Watkins and Buendia are going to be the goal scorers, but I will genuinely take anything to get a win. I don't care if we play very poorly, we get dominated and we win by a 93rd minute penalty or back post corner, own goal, I don't care. As long as we come away with 3 points, this is the most important game for me.
Are you ready for my goal scorers?
Oh, what's it? What is it? Martinez and Dean or something?
Cash and Dean.
Cash and Dean. Okay. That's Do you know what? I'll take that. I'll take anything.
As long as it's a win.
As long as it's a win. As long as it's a win, we need it. We need to get back on track. Any other news before we go?
Just to put a bad omen on the game, we haven't actually done the double over United, I think, since 1957 or something? I can't remember. I watched a video earlier and it was something like, oh, something ridiculous. And then if it wasn't 70 years, it would have been 90 years ago since we'd last done the double over United in the league. So, you know, we've not done the double in a long time. And I don't think we've actually beaten United at Villa Park since the 90s either or something like that. So, yes. You know, you keep the faith.
Yeah. And on that bombshell, thank you for listening. Like I said, we'll be back with a Man United review. So hopefully it's a positive one and we'll speak to you then. Thank you guys for listening and up the Villa.
And keep the faith. Steven Gerrard's clap to army.
Boom.